Hello there, my name's Mike Fenn, and I'm here to share some thoughts on Chapter 12 of Build with Living Stones. Chapter 12's about gender issues, and I'm partnered on this chapter with my good friend, my sister, Karen Pulaski. We're going to examine this chapter together, and after I've read the chapter and thought about it further, I'm very appreciative of how Karen asked me to partner on this chapter with her. It's the only chapter where we have two voices, and on a topic such as gender, it does feel like it's important to have both a female voice as well as a male's. So diving into the chapter, the editor of this book, you know, starts this chapter in a very shocking way, and Francis is speaking about women in a most disparaging sort of manner, as objects of temptation of the highest level. He avoided eye contact to the point he was quoted as not being able to recognize the face of women beyond two specific ones. And while the editor seems to be making a point by leading with this passage, you know, they also kind of note there aren't a lot of sources beyond this one of this strongly negative perspective of women. Now, whether these stories are accurate or not, it's clear women have had a lesser role in society during this period. They still sat in the shadow of creation stories with Eve as the antagonist, the scapegoat for our banishment from paradise. So while the introduction lays out a disposition away from being in the presence of women, we have stories with much stronger sourcing of his evolution to developing relationships with women. His obvious relationship with Claire, his relationship with Lady Jacoba, or Brother Jacoba, as the story tells, which really says a lot about the times. And the really moving moments, finally in his last days, his ability of allowing Claire and her sisters to care for him. He surrenders himself. He surrenders his bodies. He surrenders his ideals. He surrenders his old ways of thinking. Now, with gratitude, recent times have allowed for more other perspectives, including feminine voices, across theological commentary. Really, for the majority of Christianity, we had religious male commentary almost exclusively. This opening up of other voices enriches our faith. Our faith tradition is immensely deeper with the gift of these new voices. And where the chapter really lights up for me is how the sense of a woman's disposition for compassion ahead of justice, and that this dovetails really closely with the Franciscan heritage that finds relationships and cooperation, as the chapter says, to be more in favor to ones of rules and regulations. You know, and it's interesting, I find this to be a disposition that I have as I can look inwardly, and perhaps that's why I have such a strong affinity for being in a Franciscan community and among many strong women that I admire so much, both in the workplace and both in volunteer settings I'm at. I'm really blown away by the character of the women that I'm involved in, and especially that are connected to the Franciscan world. But I also think it's important to recognize that the Church has not been favorable toward women through history, and even in these modern times. As a lay male, one where I'd love to see my daughters, my granddaughters, get the nourishment that I enjoy from my faith, it's important for me to do what I can to ensure our Church community is one, not of just welcoming, but of belonging. And I think our mountain community helps set this example, but it's also important that we're not complacent about this. It's our Church community, and we need to ensure that all feel welcome at the table. Now, thanks for listening to this, and we really are entering a new territory at the mountain, you know, still adjusting to life after our founder, Father Dan Riley, who was our primary voice for decades. We'd love to be in dialogue with you. And so if there's anything that's struck by this chapter, struck by this book, please reach out to any of us. We'd love to be in conversation with you. And we want to continue to provide this sort of ministry to the world. So thanks for taking the time to listen to this, and God bless.
Greetings, and my name is Karen Pulaski. I live at Mount Irenaeus as a long-term companion and serve as the director of Faith Formation. As a woman who feels I am without a doubt trying to live my life as a Franciscan and all that this means to me, the opening paragraph of this unit is very hard to read. But I have to remind myself that Francis, as the father of the Franciscan charism, was a product of his own time, just as each of us is. To know that women in that time were only looked at as Eves or as a temptation to men and nothing else feels incredibly demeaning, empty, and shallow. But it was in this context that Francis was formed. It is out of this context that one must remember that two of Francis's significant mentors and confidants were women, St. Clare and Lady Jacoba. To know that Francis could recognize and appreciate the very thisness of these women, and despite his social upbringing, forge close and meaningful friendships with them, speaks volumes to me about his love for these two women and the role they must have played in his life and in his faith journey. This unit talks about the need for continual re-examining of the charism and how essential it is, as it is the only way to offer a witness to genuine brotherhood and sisterhood. It is incumbent upon each of us to demonstrate that men and women can share life creatively with one another. I grew up in a family that was primarily comprised of females, my dad being the only male in our family. As I grew up, I was raised to believe that I could be anything and do anything I wanted. I never felt in my own home any messaging that said I was barred from anything because I was a female. I often wonder if there had been brothers in my family, if that would have shifted the dynamic. As it was, my father only got girls, so we learned to fix the toilet and stack firewood, as well as how to cook and do laundry. It was only when I was out in the world, so to speak, that I began to sense that there were barriers inherent to me for no other reason than because I was a female. And one of the first places I learned that was at my Catholic church. Women were not allowed on the altar unless it was to clean after Mass. No female lecterns, no female altar servers, certainly no female deacons. In short, no female role models. And church wasn't the only place I got this message handed to me. Because of my fortunate upbringing, I don't think I internalized these messages from the larger world as deeply as others, and I am grateful for that. I simply didn't believe it, and recognized that it was man-made rules that prevented me from something, not an inherent lack within me just because I was female. As you may know, I currently live in community with all men. People often ask what this is like, if this is hard, do I ever feel slighted? Most times I simply don't really think about it. The times I am most aware of it are when visitors assume I am there to cook and clean and serve the brothers. It doesn't even occur to them that I live in community with my brothers, that we all share in the more domesticated tasks, and that I have more to offer than just taking care of my brothers, who, by the way, don't want to be taken care of. But I am also aware that my presence as a community member can be off-putting to some friars and even to some lay people. The vision for Mount Irenaeus has always been one that held sacred the desire for diversity in the community, a community comprised of men and women, lay and vowed. It was this inclusivity and respect for all human life and dignity that drew me to the Franciscans when I first came to St. Bonaventure as a student in the early 80s. It is these basic tenets of our Franciscan charism that continue to draw me to this life even today. I do appreciate the recognition in the unit that historically all translations and scholarly works were written by men, and that in recent years more women are finally starting to write from a scientific study and pastoral application. However, this is still significantly limited. There is need to find more ways to encourage and invite women into the written and oral interpretation and expression of Franciscan early writings, as well as interpretations throughout the years, including contemporary work. Women like Elizabeth Schussler Fiorenza, a female theologian and scholar of the New Testament, challenged the idea that historically Christianity is a male-based system, and instead argued that Jesus promoted a discipleship of equals. Sound familiar? And that this was later suppressed by patriarchal church models and structures. It's important to remember that the early Franciscan movement was comprised of lay men and women, and that women often played an important role in the early church. Women served as deacons, priests, and even bishops. From the earliest times, women were instrumental in educational, artistic, theological, and faith formation endeavors. Somehow, through the years, this history was revised, and we came to believe that at no time did women ever play a leadership role. This simply is not true. Bronwyn McShay, author of Women in Church, tells us, "We must always remember that historically, women helped shape and guide the church in so many ways and in so many roles. Even Jesus chose to first reveal himself to a woman after the resurrection." In this unit, there's discussion about whether we are guided by justice, which Carol Gilligan characterizes as identifying with rights, rules, and competition, or guided by compassion, which she says is characterized as identifying with relationships, responsibilities, and cooperation. Further, she makes the argument that justice predominates among men, while compassion predominates among women. To be honest, I think that is potentially a vast overgeneralization. I think it is far more useful, as we seek to explore and understand our Franciscan charism, to look at this through the lens of both Francis and Claire, who both emphasized in their rules the ethic of compassion as the basis of their ethic of justice. This removes the bias in gender thinking and moves us to a space of understanding the deep roots of the importance of relationship and community for all Franciscans, regardless of gender. Central for Claire and Francis, in fact, for the Franciscan charism, is relationship. Relationship with oneself, with God, and with each other. Being in right relationship with all is what we strive for, and developing and nurturing relationship is the ground on which we stand. Our belief in a triune God illustrates this. Building relationship is more important than following the rules. Judging others for not following the rules breaks down relationship. We believe we model by example, not by judging. By striving to live a gospel-centered life, which is based on love, compassion, and inclusivity, we evangelize the good news. We strive to live it out, not just talk about it. There are references in the book and many other resources that this is maternal in nature. Are these characteristics truly maternal, or are they characteristics that over time have been socialized to be a mother's role? Cannot a father show these same characteristics? Does this need to have a gender basis, or should we aspire to a basis that is defined by how we all should treat one another based on the example of Christ? Unfortunately, women today are included in the circle of the poor, the excluded, and the marginalized groups. Not only do I think this is true in the larger world in so many arenas, but it is also more than evident in our broader Catholic Church, and specifically in the Franciscan world. This was never more clear to me than when, upon attending and participating in the synod work of the province of Our Lady of Guadalupe, that women were specifically identified as part of the marginalized groups in one of the 8 priorities that came out of the synod process. This gave me both pause to feel sad, but also to feel hopeful. It is in naming it out loud, and then putting it in writing, then following up with a commitment from every friar in the room to adopt these priorities, that we can begin the long process of examining and working to eradicate systemic and personal biases against women that exist even in our Franciscan charism. I do believe that we as Franciscans can not only shed light on this, but also help to change the perspective of others by our actions. On page 160, the text states that the charism holds sacred that our own particular Franciscan-shaped witness to a community of divine love, the Trinity, demands that liberating attitudes and actions bring about the full participation and the human dignity of all our sisters and brothers. If we believe that Christ resides in each and every one of us, then we also believe that every single person, in fact, all of creation, is inherently good and worthy of dignity, and this includes women. Each one of us must ask ourselves, how do my actions speak to this belief? Where in my actions do I minimize, even if unconsciously, the women I encounter? Do my actions truly speak to the belief that we need to confront and eliminate sexism in all its visible and hidden forms? Am I willing to look closely and critically at how I live my life every day and how I interact with others to begin to identify those times that I subconsciously or even consciously contribute to sexism? Yes, even as a woman. Christ didn't limit his ministry or his love to men, but chose the path of inclusivity, a path that embraced everyone, including the marginalized. Do we have the courage to be willing to do the same? May the peace of Christ be with you, and thank you for joining us on this journey of building relationship and deepening our understanding of the Franciscan Charism. God bless.